Welcome to Mock It. Liz is a user experience strategist turned project manager committed to human-centered driven approaches and results. She has worked on 20-plus higher education, government, and client-facing websites and software platforms, creating long-lasting, user-focused digital solutions. Liz is devoted to equity and strives to celebrate diversity and inclusion in the industry and beyond. Marie is a former visual designer turned agile-loving, human-centered design advocate. They have helped government organizations for almost a decade build successful digital products by aligning cross-functional teams around a deep understanding of the user at the heart of their mission. Marie is passionate about improving user experiences while achieving business objectives in harmony. They are also a strong advocate for women in STEM.
Hi, I'm Marie.
And I'm Liz.
And this is Mock It, a podcast sponsored by MetroStar, where we take a deep dive look into UX design, trending design topics, and chatting with our friends in the field. Let's get started.
So today we have a super fun episode. We've kindly entitled it From Gaming to Government. So we're talking with Matt, who is a principal UX architect at MetroStar. Matt, welcome.
Thank you.
You have over a decade of experience in retail and government design. From startups to gaming retails, you've had a hand in creating user experience design for a variety of users. We are excited to pick your brain today. Thanks. And if you wouldn't mind, could you take a minute to introduce yourself and give a little bit more background on who you are?
Yeah, sure. No, thank you for having me. My name is Matt Schwatt, principal UX architect at MetroStar. Been here for about 3 years now, so I guess 2020, the beginning of the pandemic, is when I came. Literally the first, I think it was the first remote onboarded team for MetroStar. So it was right, they shut the offices down, first
need
remote
like a,
onboarding.
A badge like, for that.
Yeah, it was a super interesting experience. But yes, kind of principal UX architect, but my career has taken me kind of all across the spectrum. I come from a background in design. So I started in school, like in college, I was a music major, and then I switched to design. And then, which was really at the time, early 2000s. So it was interactive multimedia, and that's what they called. So, and I'm sure I think you have questions to talk more about that. So I kind of came out of school and I got a job. First job was in government. And this is kind of my path to getting kind of where I got to MetroStar. It's a long one. So first job was a government contract out of school, about 3 years on it. And that was literally like, I was doing a big portal site for the Army National Guard, worked with, there were some, and at the time, this is how old it is. We were switching from table-based HTML layouts to div-based.
Oh my gosh.
So this is literally like box model stuff, CSS. This is like, you know, the beginnings of all that stuff. And so I was really coming out and, you know, designer first mentality, but I really was learning front end development, Macromedia Flash, like all sorts of stuff that I had and kind of wanted to play around with anything creative. Came in and kind of with that government contract was a small contractor, and I was eager to kind of be in private and just, like I wanted more work, and I was constantly like helping friends, doing side projects, doing, my friends are in bands, and like I was in bands, and we would just make stuff, and from music to album covers to like websites to all different
That's
stuff. So
cool.
Like I really wanted to be able to like kind of push and just keep learning and do like higher level stuff. And I realized like where I was at the time was not for me to learn. Like there would be a time period to come back, but so I left and I kind of went into private industry, like an association, a small design firm in Northern Virginia. And I was really kind of everything from email newsletter updating, like quick, you know, like here's our email newsletter. It's like straight HTML and like I'm coding it in or breaking things down and doing front end development, doing UX design, doing visual design. At the time, that's really what it was, really focused on web. So web, digital marketing, HTML newsletters, websites. Could be flash, like screen, I don't know, like, what did they call them? When you would come to like a website, it would be like a little slideshow that plays in flash.
Oh, the little like carousel thing or
It was like a e-card almost.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is like old school. So about a year there, I like tripled my workload. you know, because coming from government, it was a little slower. I would push myself, and I'm just constantly like that. So I go to this firm, and then about a year later, I find on Craigslist an opening down the street from my house at a small e-commerce startup that I was very aware of called ThinkGeek, and didn't realize that they were located in Northern Virginia. Immediately applied, heard back the next day, went in for an interview the next day, got the job the next day.
Oh, wow.
And I stayed there for over a decade. And that kind of, I came in UX, and really that's like, they were like, we were like 30 people at the time in this small little, in Fairfax City, like this old, the old, I think it was the old school building in there. And okay. It's like right down Main Street, right across from TJ Maxx, that like old building.
Yeah.
That's where we were, 30 people, very quickly. Within that time period, they were in growth. They had been around since 1999. E-commerce centered on like geek culture. So like my Pikachu Bart, you know, so it's like anything like geek related. So it was like very smart products, kind of licensed products too. So that was starting to begin into that. So things like Star Wars, Star Trek, lightsaber chops. We would make products, custom development, product development. And I really came in through a big redesign period. So they were taking their e-commerce site, which was all homegrown built, homegrown e-commerce platform, small, like you're talking small design front end development team of like three of us. One of them went on to kind of lead HTML emails, marketing, email marketing, social media marketing, and insane growth at this time. And like perfect timing. It's like perfect timing to learn. We grew from 30 people within 3 years. We grew from like $30 million to like $120 million of growth. We were like over a million followers on Twitter before that was a thing. So this is like, I joined ThinkGeek in 2009 when the iPhone came out. So like in 2010, we're designing the mobile app for iPhone.
Right.
And like, I'm literally small team. So I'm having to learn, and like, I'm doing front end development too. So I own it all at these kind of places. So this is where I'm getting kind of my breath. I am called UX architect, but where my kind of background is, I owned at ThinkGeek, where I ended up becoming director of user experience and kind of owning the team who really did everything from the front of the process of designing how features and functionality for retail and our e-commerce platform would work to things like wish lists or stored payment method, right?
Yeah.
Stored credit cards. And we would have to define those features and build them, or buy online, ship to store when we got acquired. So I definitely, you know, within about, what was it? So within 6 years, like I was at ThinkGeek for a very long time. And those are like my best friends. So still to this day, like the founders.
Yeah.
Some of the greatest people I've ever met, smartest people, most empathetic. The word, it was really like a family, and it was a startup culture. So they were publicly traded though. So we had a board, you had board meetings, you had annual, like, you know, things to align against and all that stuff. And so I'm really getting like fast paced, wide breadth experience. I report to the CMO for half of my tenure, half of my tenure to the CIO of the company. So within engineering, because we own front end development and UX, and it was kind of, it's not really like the unicorns that they talk about, like you can do it all, but like my team would be, our team was like, really, we would handle all of those pieces. And so you'd have stronger folks in kind of the visual design and maybe UX and into front end development. And then the people who are front end development, like leaning heavier into like maybe the coding side, because we had a whole entire in-house engineering team. And so it was really good, kind of site marketing owned that with how we schedule stuff. So working with marketing to determine those schedules and implementing them, and third party partners. It was really kind of fast paced and growth. And so we really grew, and then got acquired by GameStop in 2015. And then about, you know, and that's really where we started to do a lot of really cool stuff that kind of bridges into service design, where you're online and like we're building brick and mortar stores. Mm-hmm. So GameStop really gave us the ability to prop up brick and mortar stores for ThinkGeek. That would be like, okay, well, I mean, first thing we did is we're having conversations about what is the staff? Like, how do we, what type of staff, how do they act? Like, how do we want them to act? Mm-hmm. What do we call them? You know, and then try to, how do we bring culture from ThinkGeek, which was huge. How do we bring that culture into the employee experience and then ultimately driving an experience you want for your customers? And then how do you tie that stuff back in to the GameStop ecosystem, right? To be able to like one customer, right? And bring them in. Mm-hmm. And so it's really cool to be able to create stuff like buy online, ship to store, which is super common because of the pandemic now. And just ground up features. Like we were pre-selling, this is like Switch coming out. You remember PS5 was huge. Mm-hmm. Well, we were pre-selling the Nintendo Switch when that came out, and that was huge. And just like at the same time, really modernizing the underlying engineering, like infrastructure. So moving from on-premises systems to cloud infrastructure. So AWS. So we used to work with Rackspace. I was heavily involved with SEO because it's a huge impact on, you know, how many eyes get on this stuff. So, and also front end development, a lot of SEO is driven from things you're doing in front end development. So like how, you know, a lot of the tagging, you got to work with those guys. So they have for implementation, it would be on our backlog. And so kind of that whole wide breadth and really getting that. And then around 2018, GameStop shifted operations for ThinkGeek down to Texas. And that's, and offered me a role. At the time I was working with GameStop, like going down occasionally to help with, they were doing a big replatform of their website from Microsoft product, an older one, to Salesforce Commerce Cloud. And I was helping with that project and kind of really bringing a lot of the, I mean, at this time, like a decade of building my own, of our own e-commerce platform, all of these integrations we've done, I really kind of like had, I was really kind of centered around like a little bit like our architect. Like I knew where all the bodies were hidden. Like I knew our platform. I knew all the integrations. I managed a lot of our third party relationships for like Adobe Analytics or site marketing stuff, product recommendations, people like Certona, or so any marketing technology, that kind of stuff. And so I really was able to come down there and something, you know, we ran it homegrown and learned a lot from who I work with and all that stuff. So I was able to bring a lot of that knowledge to GameStop. They offered me, you know, to come over to help ThinkGeek, which I was, you know, to be director of Omnichannel. And then they offered me kind of a principal experience architect in their enterprise architecture and engineering. And that's really who I was working with. That's like, we were working on innovation projects. And like, that's really where I like to bring experience design, that kind of thinking, experience thinking, UX thinking, and to the broader GameStop ecosystem. And looking at that over the years, like looking at that longer term and saying, you know, at this time, GameStop was really going through a lot of like, this was like trying to re-envision, you know, kind of what they do, how do they do what they do, change the story, what value they provide. And there's huge value at GameStop with what they've done and the customer base and how long they've been there. So it kind of plays into where I see myself kind of going my career around product is like looking at kind of what's out there and how to leverage the most value out of what you have and how to drive, you know, big concept visions across a giant enterprise. There's over 300 in their technology and they were going through digital modernization. So working with third-party contractors and I really got exposed to kind of a lot of that, you know, from helping them migrate ThinkGeek operations from Northern Virginia down to Grapevine using a whole entire third party like contracting company out of Bangalore, India, which we used to be in-house. So, you know, that's a challenge in and of itself to keep track of those things, get them down, make sure operations are money still coming in the door, top line revenue on the site, the site's up, it's capturing money. And there was just great experience then transitioning over to GameStop and working on some much bigger ideas, big ideas, like some of the stuff that's really kind of that they've gone after in years, you know, that I've seen. And it was really, really fun and really stuff around like reimagining GameStop stores, getting to get exposed to some huge design firms out of like Austin, Texas or Chicago RGA, and really getting to break out of the, you know, where I started is all digital, world. It is a digital world, like web. It's like building websites, you know, and all this stuff. And it becomes more, everything at ThinkGeek that taught me was about process, like service, what you would, I guess, call service design. It's about the people. It's the same thing we do, human-centered. Mm-hmm. It's all about the people, but it's all objective-based. Everything relates to process, but driving value. Like, it comes down to that. Like, at the end of the day, publicly traded companies, investors and private, it's how are you providing value long-term? How do you provide value? And how you can communicate up and tie back in what you're doing to say, here's the best way to get there and get to that value. So out of that, kind of worked on those ideas for a while. And then towards the summer of 2019, I didn't end up actually moving towards Texas. So I ended up staying here and caught up, was taking a little bit of a break because I'd worked there for such a long time. Mm-hmm. And got in touch. Actually, Jason Stoner, mm-hmm. who works here, the director of digital strategy, got in touch with me and kind of we went to lunch. This was in like the fall of 2019 and said, you know, it was pretty much like, hey, you know, like I don't see people like you come across, you mm-hmm. know, the market very often, like with a resume. And he's like, how have we not met? You know, we're about similar in age, into similar music, into similar stuff like design. And just, you know, being in Northern Virginia, and I'm, which you don't find often, I'm a native Northern Virginia, so I was born here. You know, it was really great. And we went out to lunch, had a great chat, and I came in here and chatted some more about kind of what the opportunities were with MetroStar. And I had heard of them definitely over the years working in Northern Virginia, not just through, you know, the proximity. I mean, ThinkGeek was down the street from here in Fairfax to... You know, I had friends of friends work here before that I had new acquaintances who worked here. But at the time, I'm solely not thinking about government, like at all. Like, but, you know, I'm leaving GameStop. I took a pause. I had to take a pause from kind of retail industry for a little bit due to some NDAs. But that kind of opened up opportunity to say, hey, you know, talking to Jason and looking at MetroStar and seeing like kind of... Hey, coming, I cut my teeth and learned like all my habits and understanding all this stuff from startup, like really delivering, you know, and that's really mm-hmm. what it was. It's like a delivery aspect, everything towards like, you know, execution and kind of that and bringing all this experience that I have and coming back to government and saying, you know, hey, there's the same problems exist everywhere, like in mm-hmm. public and private and kind of being able to. You know, I saw a little bit of what MetroStar was doing, a little bit of where the government has gone, which went, you know, bringing some standards with a lot of like the U.S. web design system, U.S. digital service. Like I saw when that came out, those types of things really excited me because it's like you're seeing those things from private, you know, commercial side. Well, yeah, I mean, some of the newest stuff like innovations, right? Design systems, Brad Frost, you mm-hmm. know. Who went to JMU, JMU grad. So shout out to Brad as well.
Are you also a JMU grad?
I am. I know Brad.
Oh, nice.
I do, yeah. And those types of things, like that stuff's super exciting. Like, and that to see that get pulled in, right? Those types of work, you know, concepts and a lot of those design innovations, they are meant to help and they do help. Mm-hmm. And seeing them brought into the government space where, you know, typically you don't. Like in my mind at the time, like it was like, I remember my first job and I'm like, oh, the colonel on my contract wanted it to look like the Drudge Report. Literally, like said, make it look yeah. like the Drudge Report. And I'm looking at this site of like blue link text and I'm like, no. Like, well, if it worked, great, but it still, that wasn't the point. It was like highest paid person's opinion. So moving from that to human-centered design, where things are more driven by the value, right? The mm-hmm. real value provided to the users, but ultimately to the business. That was huge. And like come back and it was exciting and seeing like, it's not just one opportunity. There's a lot of opportunities mm-hmm. to work. And that kind of how it brought me here. So yeah.
Awesome. That was a very like exciting journey yeah. of your career. So with your breadth of experience and knowledge, for our listeners that are looking into what type of industry would they like to go into? Can you share the pros and cons from your experience from retail, startup, and government?
Yeah.
You're like, right away.
yeah. I mean, again, I I guess it kind of depends on where you are in your career. Maybe some are better fit for others to like, and different things that people want, right? I think there's, you know, in the retail world, like everything's changed, right? You have Shopify, you have all these places where, you know, platforms that are built that people are out there, like you can leverage and start up kind of your own e-commerce thing. But startup in general, like 0 to 1 or that kind of fast paced commercial environment, you're going to learn a lot. You're going to learn a lot of breadth, right? Mm-hmm. Like across things, because everybody has to like lend a hand. There's nobody. It's like literally my old boss used to say, don't stand around with an empty bucket. Like make sure to fill it, right? You don't want people standing around with empty buckets. So that's really how it is. You're filling your bucket. You kind of jump in wherever it is. So like that, for learning wise, to me, I loved it. And I still love it. Like I still love that environment, which is why tech challenges, which we'll talk about, I think a little bit, that's kind of why I do well in those fast paced, you know, kind of things. So very fast paced, big workload, a lot of, I don't know. Just a lot to me, I'm very passionate about the work too. So there's a lot of, you get a lot of reward, like out of delivery with your, you know, kind of your, the other people that you're working with. But I would say important to believe in the business and what you do, like what they do, that helps a lot. ThinkGeek, I was a customer before I was an employee. I saw myself, I still see myself as a ThinkGeek customer. And even though it doesn't exist, but it's like, I believed in it. I believed in the, I loved the audience. I love the customer base that we were going after. Everything from like when we used to vendor at different comic, you know, Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, PAX East, PAX West. We would set up a booth. We had to design how you'd sell in the booth, but still retain the orders in our order management system. So using things like Square, like the first time ever that we would have, we had to think of that. It was the first time we ever retailed at an event to, we have ended up growing to the point where that became more turnkey. And those experiences were really, really cool. Being able to tie them back. But yeah, startup world, you kind of very fast paced, you get to learn a lot. If you can get in at a retailer, I think you'll still see silos kind of thing. The bigger the retailer, you'll still see kind of some of these silos. And I think, but some of the newer ones are really kind of building them more as like product organizations, right? So you might be, you really could get in a position to where you could cross cut some experiences across like a retailer and learn that stuff. So it's bigger you get with that out of like startup world e-commerce, you'll get a touch a lot. You'll get to kind of see how this stuff's integrated, which is super fun. But I think the bigger the retailer gets in commercial world, the more siloed, you, just like with any business, smaller the business, the more kind of less people, the more everybody will do. The bigger the business, they kind of start to break those things down and understand how big these teams need to be. So you might have like a smaller crosscut of the business that you're working on. Like a specific application, like a GameStop, like store systems, right? Like, and those store experiences, the order management system or their website, their online experience. And then even down to like product, like merchandisers and marketing, there's one person for homepage. You'll have people for search marketing and merchandising. And so it can get really granular. But fast paced is super fun. I love it. Like it's really rewarding to kind of, you know, I was in a very lucky position to where I could get to see, you know, we had at ThinkGeek 10 million unique visitors during the holidays per month, like in-house photo, in-house video. So it was like, it was just very fast paced. I love startup world, but it's fast paced and you're kind of like on call all the time because nobody else is, right? And if the business is like, who else is there to run it? So you guys are there and you, you know, and you can get rewarded from that, you know, if you find the right places. But then there's like, and then I would say, you know, so you kind of lose, like until I came to MetroStar, I didn't know what holiday, having time off during the holidays was. I'd be on a call, like an 8 a.m. call, you know, because that's Black Friday, Cyber Monday. I would always leave Thanksgiving dinner early. It didn't bother me. I loved what I did and Black, like executing all that stuff. That's prime time for retail. So like, but come in, so you kind of trade off, but come into government work, you do get all the government holidays. So I actually can have a holiday time, which is just a different, you know, experience. So I think government work is super exciting because kind of pros and cons to both of these different things. Yeah. And I think it depends on your position too. So like coming in, it is slower paced, I would say sometimes, because I have been there, mm-hmm. like I come all different types of work, but I've worked on my project and some of the stuff is very fast paced. You know, like I get these glimpses of like, oh yeah, like this is how fast we were running in retail world. But I think, you know, you do get a little bit more kind of governments more separation, like they are working these certain hours, certain other hours. You don't, you know, you might, mm-hmm. you'll see less of the 24/7 kind of thing, but you'll see hard work during those times. I think you get a lot of opportunity to zero to one and do like there's a lot of projects that come across where it's like, we're looking to modernize something that was on pieces of paper.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's not like I'm taking websites. I feel like
you can relate with your current project. Right?
Probably. But like modernizing processes that were done on, like I literally had somebody say to me at a project, like this process is only known by this one person written on this one piece of paper. Like no joke. And it's like,
that's nutty.
I'm trying to design a process to cover all these people, right? Mm-hmm. And saying it needs to cover that as well. So it's super cool to be able to, like, you talk about modernization, you're dealing with kind of like, you can show a big vision, right? Like you can, there's so much right there to get better. And it's all the best mission, right? It's all mm-hmm. our money. It's our tax money. Every project is really, it's all coming from the government. It's all the stuff that we pay into and the programs that are being funded. Super high value rather than me selling like Pikachu buttons or lightsaber chopsticks, right? Which is super fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're still pretty cool, yeah, but not this, cool. Not the same as knowing, right? Nope. Our salaries are like I put into my own salary.
Yeah, like, so. Or knowing that you worked with like the Department of Agriculture mm-hmm. to modernize how we disseminate and capture, to reimagine and completely change their way of thinking about how they release data about agriculture to the United States, to people out there in the world mm-hmm. is huge. And like those have huge impacts on stock markets, commodity markets. These are, you know, farmers and status, and they believe in like what they do. And there's a high, every mission is, mm-hmm. it's not in commercial world, it's bottom line revenue, right? At the end of the day, sell more of this product, drive this top, you know, drive more. You know, a lot of it is like, that's really what you're thinking about is like, how do we drive more revenue? How do we get longer lifetime value out of customers, which is all about top line revenue, you know, bottom line revenue, right? How much being able to sell and connect more people to your product. And here it's about the end of the line vision is providing a mission, mm-hmm, right? Yeah. It's a service to the United States citizens. And like, so when, you know, in USX or wherever I am, I call kind of product or whatever it is, it's really understanding what's the top vision that you're, what's the top value? What is that goal? What's the objective that your stakeholders, mm-hmm. right, are thinking about? Because you want a seat at the table, everything. Like I've been through a lot of those seat at the tables. It always drives back to understanding what their objective is. And in the government, having that objective be delivered, right? Like kind of the top level to the citizens is hugely valuable, but also easy to keep. It's really easy to like keep your eye on it, right? As like your shining star.
Well, I like also in UX or human centered design, there has been all of a sudden a push for the UX with the stakeholders or the empathy with our stakeholders plus with our users. And I think that's what you're getting at, that
yeah,
I think the UX community realizing, great, I can get a seat at the table, tell you it's valuable for the end customer when it's all kind of based on profit is your driver for those stakeholders. But in the government, right, like they're really there for the people and all of that. So having, you have to do the same things as understanding the users of your forms, your website, whatever service, also of your stakeholder to, you know, what drives them every morning to come.
Well, and to give your example, earlier on in your career, it was a very top-down approach mm-hmm. of this is going to be the end product exactly. because you know, the person with the highest salary, that's what they wanted.
Hippo.
But now it's becoming, to your point, with the surge in UX and the surge of understanding of UX and how valuable users are, it's kind of this, or it's more equitable mm-hmm. and everyone's more empathetic. So the person at the top realizes that if I'm not in agreement or, you know, at least a little bit simpatico with my user,
yeah,
you're not going to be the person at the top for very long.
100%. Like, I think you're 100% right. That's like a really great way to put it is, I think the biggest changes that I've seen is that they start, the government has understood that it's the same reason it works in the private industry, right? Why UX, why product has seats at the table mm-hmm. is because it works, right? To drive value. Like you want to drive out, that process works, right? Mm-hmm. Roadmap, understanding the value, understanding market share, understanding all these different things, prioritization and understanding road mapping and agile and all of these different things that go into it. And you ultimately human-centered design, right? Decomposing and being able to kind of lay things out and be empathetic towards the user. So you're understanding like, how do you continually drive value to them? They understand providing value to the user provides value to the business. Mm-hmm. That has that's been known for a while, which is kind of given UX and the government. That's kind of the difference you see is like, yes, when I started, it wasn't, it was very old school waterfall, very waterfall, date driven, highest paid person's opinion, which is like kind of a saying that we would do. But it really was like that. And versus research based, data based, qualitative, quantitative, taking all this stuff in and all the inputs in and understanding how to really provide value will ultimately drive the value you're looking for, right? In government, I think they've understood that, start to incorporate some of those concepts. And it's really fun to bring that back into, you know, kind of go in back into government and bring those same types of thinking into it because they take to it. Where they, yeah.
So you've given us a little bit of an overview of the pros and cons of the different industries that you've worked in. What would you say would be, regardless of which industry you're in, what skill sets cross over every industry?
Oh. Well, I mean, it depends on the position, you know, like kind of said, I've talked about a lot of different from front end development, right? To like full stack developers, to UX design, to visual design, to service design. I mean, there's a whole sets of like different roles in the private industry, you know, in the government world, you will still see more hybrid kind of titling. You know, I'll see business analysts, which are kind of like product managers mm-hmm. in a sense, like understanding the business and understanding the value and really putting yourself in that headspace and being able to say, yeah, I'm prioritizing the work based off of what your needs are. So there's a wide variety of different roles. I'd say in UX design, a lot of them translate. I would almost say in commercial world, you might see things like skirting some parts of the process that, you know, we are in it. It depends also to in-house versus consultancy, right, too, as well. So like you might see some of the stuff, definitely all of the same UX wireframing to like user research to all of the different types of design methodology that we know about is all transferable. It's stuff we do in both worlds, right? You're going to do research in both worlds. So you're going to do all this stuff in both worlds. You may not take as much time, you know, in commercial, you may have times, there may be places you work that do it, like have more formalized with it. There may be startups where you're less formalized and you're kind of making your own way with that. So really understanding, like kind of having a breadth of UX design background is helpful. I think understanding, regardless of UX, understanding technology, the digital mm-hmm. space is imperative. Like you just need to do it no matter where you are. Because if you're, I think a lot of what we do is thinking about, right? What are people's actual problems? What to understand mm-hmm. what is the most value we can provide them? What are the best experiences? How do I set these big visions? And really to be able to do those, the more you understand about the underlying technologies, the more tools you have in your box to create an experience with. So having that kind of, I think that backward, like taking time, it doesn't mean you need to learn how to code. Like I learned how to code out of back in the day because it was literally like the time period was like, you did that, right? And I mm-hmm. also like took to it. I really like it. I love, you know, I'm kind of love the technical aspects, learned a ton about it. Have led teams, you know, from full, like up and down the chain, API development to data modeling, to all sorts of different technical stuff. And it's just because I know that's how you make an impact, right? Like at the end of the day, you deliver, right? And you deliver through, you know, your technology and your implementation. So if you want to create, it's one thing that I thought to create experiences, I didn't want to just create them. I didn't deliver them and see them through. And being at a place for a decade, I had to own all my decisions. Like all our decisions we made, how these things work, you're going to hear about it from customers. And it's not like you left the project. You're literally in-house team. It's like that bug that's on wish list that everybody's complaining about forever. That's on your backlog, right? Yeah. And it's not going to sit there for a decade. Some, maybe it would sometimes. But yeah, so it just get like having a understanding of the technology that underlies, not necessarily developer, but just understanding those types of architectures and kind of how these things work and using the stuff as your users would. I think those are really beneficial to bring anywhere you go. As well as like standard visual design, you know, being able to, if you were in visual design, being able to create interfaces and learning in the modern tools. That's a great part about government now is like, you're not like somebody telling you, go use this old school, you know, tool, especially for design wise. It's not like a developer being told to go write COBOL, which is like old, you know, old code versus like, I'm a front end dev and I want to work in React and like these modern frameworks and like all this different stuff. That does happen in government work sometimes, but for design, you can learn Figma. You learn the new tools. You learn how, because all those things are going to help you. Because in government, you're still going to have the need that everywhere has. That's the biggest need, which is translating between UX and technology and translating between design and developer. So that handoff and like, so bringing those skills, I think will translate it.
Yeah.
So I guess I have a question. One thing that you and I have in common is we were in government contracting. We left government contracting and did not want to come back to government contracting. Maybe for different reasons. But now that you're back in the government world, what keeps you excited to stay in the government world?
That is a great question. And we do have it in common. Like I said, yeah, I left and I probably couldn't. I did not look back.
Yeah, you know,
and definitely did not. And like, and I was lucky, you know, I hit a place where I was, you know, I got really great experiences and it's super fun. And like some of these projects are tons of fun that I worked on. But what brings kind of kept me excited, because I've been here for a little bit now, is I'd say one, just like I said before, the breadth of kind of work, kind of like the government's understanding of where design is. But also because they're dealing with some processes that are literally one-offs all over the place, a big thing of where I saw the biggest impact and where you could make in kind of more startups is making your, you know, teaching people how to digitally modernize business processes and tie this stuff in together and operationalize stuff to make it easier and to give them a platform to build off of, right? So that whole idea of like being able to look at like, just look out at a landscape of different technology and one-off business processes and be able to come up with ideas and visions on how to basically communicate an end state, a vision that allows you to get from point A to point B and then tell them that. Like, that's what I've gotten to do. You know, I've gotten to be a part of, I've gotten to stand up teams, like, which is super fun. For me, so like building brand new agile teams, I've played Scrum Master all my, like I got to play a lot of different roles and bring a lot of the, and teach people and bring them along and teach the government clients and kind of feel like a partner to them, right? And so, and they, and see the excitement that they have in working that way and kind of the opportunities, making them think differently, right? And getting to think through some of these problems and bring kind of, you know, the passion that I had out there into the same passion in these places, it makes them really excited. And that's super rewarding for me. And it is never short of opportunity, right? Like, and for somebody like me, who's a thinker, who's a problem solver, I love visioning. I love setting, like kind of seeing a path towards what is possible, but also knowing how to get there, like to deliver it. It is super fun to be able to kind of always have these different problems to, you know, solve, help people think differently, but also like MetroStar for me in my career, it's like help grow MetroStar too and bring, you know, I see the similar processes in what we do as we do human-centered design, very unique to government space. I think in what MetroStar does in terms of the culture of design and kind of what we do. And so to kind of be able to bring that and also help MetroStar leverage that to gain more work and grow the ultimately grow the business of MetroStar because it's super valuable. That is rewarding because the last place I was at, GameStop, like my prime objective was growing GameStop, right? How do I leverage working on these big, big ideas on how, like partnership ideas too, as well, of like how to GameStop work with other giant partners out there in the world. And to really ultimately drive more value for GameStop and to bring that same thinking ultimately at the end of the day, whether it's working this project that leads to these two or three projects or creating relationships with whomever, to be able to say, hey, how can we bring this great stuff that we're doing for the federal government and go out there and tell that story and write and provide, you know, represent MetroStar and represent that kind of thinking and help us hire the right people and build the right systems and build the right, like we have internal tools that we use that we're building, which is the same thing in commercial world, like private industry. You build those centralized kind of centers of excellence and those types of things. That's kind of what's kept me here and been really fun and exciting for me.
Cool. Well, I feel like you just gave a good lead on to the next question about centers of excellence. So you're part of the MetroStar's Client Solution Group, which is a group of colleagues. This feels weird to talk about them because I'm also on it. That felt really like weird third body. But anyways, they do a lot of research and development. Can you talk about how it is to work on that kind of team, right? You're not doing something that's like right for the mission of a current contract, yeah. But right, it's work to help because there's been problems that group has seen.
Yeah.
And then also how those tie into tech challenges.
100%. Again, like with anything you approach, there's objectives, like business of objectives, right? And MetroStar has objectives, you know, business development, driving more business. And so innovate, how research and design feeds into that, how tech challenges feed into growing the overall MetroStar business. It's a different thinking from project work, right?
Mm-hmm.
But how do centers of excellence and things like client, like these solution groups, how do you kind of think you gauge your head towards that? It's really shifting the focus, right? Whereas MetroStar, as a private business, right, we have investors mm-hmm. and we want to drive growth. And in order to drive growth, I think about, and this is literally kind of probably unique to, this is my experience, right? Because I always am thinking about this stuff. So like, how do you drive it? We get business in multiple different variety of ways. Mm-hmm. And whether that's through traditional proposal writing, right? Or, you know, present, you know, responding to kind of contracts that are put out there by the government, requesting, you know, kind of in the more traditional sense, or whatever it is, we tell a story about MetroStar's capabilities, right? And there, as we said, there's always, the government's always out there looking for work, looking for mm-hmm. companies. So it's important for us to stay abreast of all the things going on. It's important for us to know how to work with an incredibly wide variety of technology, apply solutions across those and how to employ them in order to understand how to provide value across like a wide variety of problems that the government's going to come out and ask about. And so important to any contracting company is not just the people you staff on your projects to kind of do a great job there and build the business up from there. It's also how do you go acquire new work? And part of that is having robust teams, and MetroStar does a great job investing in research and design towards whether it's new stuff. You want to know AI, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about it now. We've been watching a long time. It's been around for a long, long time. And then it's just going to be a matter of time before those things, you start seeing them feed into government contracts mm-hmm. and like the way people are pitching. And these people don't exist in a vacuum. The government workers are in the real world. They see news. They see what's out there. They want to hear about could we leverage that? Is that an opportunity? Is this an opportunity? So mm-hmm. for us to do research and design, to be able to prototype, it not only gives us the knowledge, right? And the staff to teach them, like we start to bring that knowledge in-house to be able to staff up people. So as we staff, we can kind of have these groups who are centers of excellence for these teams who are working projects to kind of leverage similar tools. That's a whole nother story about centers of excellence. But yeah, that really helps us go out and capture new business, retain that new business and continue. And it's a continuous thing. It's like you're constantly out there. Just as you talk about the work you do and you say, hey, government, we did this. Look at this great thing. We can do this. you're saying, here's our capabilities, but it also feeds into, like I said, your toolbox. Like if understanding the technology, understanding any of this new stuff, like, right, it gives you a bigger toolbox to create solutions off of and to be able to drive the right solutions, whether it's optimizing, you know, and cost savings. So those are important to MetroStar. So that's kind of how I shift my parent, like the thinking. And then that really starts to say, then how do you bring, you know, the other value that those internal teams that cross cut across an organization bring value to the organization itself is like centers of excellence too. How do you create standards to drive across projects, right? When you have a variety of clientele, well, MetroStar, another big important thing to us is in creating consistency in our delivery, right? We want to deliver excellence constantly. Like, no matter the project, it's a level of excellence that MetroStar brings to the table with anybody you're going to work with. And that's part of, I think, telling that story is ensuring that we, and that's something we do a good job at, is having centers of excellence where we define some of the best practices, standards. So for UX, we can bleed that out to the teams and the different UX people there. They have a place to go tie back into, or whether it's AI and ML, right? We have tools and we have research, and you want to talk to people. That's what CSG is there. They demo, they talk to clients, you can put them up in front. You need ideas, right? Or agile, right? Think of things that cross-cut processes and kind of work streams, development, you know, software engineering to DevOps. And so it's not like you want, it helps to create consistency, helps to create expectation and delivery for us as an organization, which ultimately leads to better relationships and more work and ultimately business like growth for MetroStar. And so that kind of takes you into tech challenges, which is another way to which is one other way for you to win work, you know, in the government is that, I don't know if we talked about them on the show or not, but tech challenges are just another type of something that knew that it was when I came in brand new. Literally, like, we're going to build a whole little product development team. And with it's like a design sprint to me. It's like a hackathon, right? Yeah. So they'll give you a problem and they'll give you a set amount of days, and you have an entire team, like a product development team, from the scrum master to product managers to solution architects to developers to API developers to whomever, designers, and you throw them all together, and within a set amount of days, over a scope of work, you basically break it down and you come out with a solution and you present it back to the client or back to the government. Mm-hmm. And from that, they down select. And then you might present, you know, so there's different variety of ways to do it. But in concept, it's all the same. You get a problem, you solve within X amount of time within a certain group. And that parlays directly into another value that the CSG, the centers of excellence provide that MetroStar has, I think, part of our strategic advantage, right? So as you're going for the type of work, if you were to do that work and start it from scratch every time, it would take it's a lot of lift, right? You're only going to be able to get so far, like over a set amount of time. So MetroStar's been able to, as we've been doing this for a while, and I've been doing it for now, I'd say since I started at MetroStar, and lucky to be a part of multiple of them, one of them which we've won work from, maybe a couple.
I think a couple recently.
Yeah, a couple. Yeah. Recently,
there's recently. Been a nice, nice couple of wins.
And, you know, to be able to see that and kind of, I would say even before I started on the tech challenges, I was working on basically me and Johnny Bowder, one of our front end developers here with Jason and an intern, front end developer intern. We were working on a starter code repository that took the US web design system and wrapped them in React components and made like a starter kit that basically you could build an app. And we would put these integrations in with storybooks so you could see the components and just basically building this baseline repository, like code repo, that for any of the tech challenges that we would do or even projects, right? Like, the thought is really we're creating something that we can use for business growth as well as for project work if we need to, but creating that centralized kind of like starter kit for here's how you can get started with front development. That stuff lends itself to what you might call a runway, right? Like, it's runway work. So as you do these tech challenges, or even with projects that are starting 0 to 1 or a startup that starts 0 to 1, there's a certain amount of time runway to get to be able to like build your app or build whatever thing you're doing, which really is around like setting standards, how you work, you know, and a lot of those things we have been doing, you know, over years at MetroStar. And that's kind of the other piece of what we do is set those standards. So everything we're doing and every tech challenge I've been in has been bringing back from those tech challenges and building up that baseline, mm-hmm. whether it's the front end development, whether it's recently, I just like Confluence Spaces, right? And sharing like how we work in project spaces and really being able to create standards that we can then take and go, boom, we're going to do a challenge. Here's all the stuff we got. And it's really great that you can leverage, whether we're Prime or whether you want to come and work with us as partners on it and come work, come ask MetroStar to be your partner in a tech challenge, because we will bring to the table to bear a lot of really great stuff that we've is the benefit of working with a company like MetroStar that's been around, you know, since 1999, since forever.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I love my templated stuff, right? Like the whole, like skip the runway, like let's go start customizing for your problem. But that's cool. I noticed I saw with the React components, I love seeing that. And I think also USWDS has come a far way for that to even be possible.
Oh yeah, huge.
So that's been really cool to see over the last year or two, maybe because pandemic time, everything's only the last year. But yeah, that, and then that's a good point about your Confluence space or where any of your documentation is.
Yeah.
Cause something to touch on with tech challenges, they don't always drop necessarily when you expect them, and you have to be able to, people come in and out, right? Cause we still have like, people have vacations already planned, yep. or sick days just happen. So that's a good part where the documentation, yeah. someone can jump in, see it, you know, and then be able to start.
And part of the building these centralized tools is making them easy to understand. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever it is, right? Because you're, like you just said, you don't know when they're going to drop mm-hmm. the tech challenge. And a lot of times you're mitigating from a team level, you're mitigating who's in, who's out. I mean, yeah. can't tell how many conversations I have with, you know, Jason about, oh, if this pushes longer, we're going to need, you know, this person's out. What skills do we need to fill in here? But you got to think about it. A lot of times you're pulling together every challenge I've been on is pulling together a group of people who have typically not worked together before. Mm-hmm. And you have to have them work together, learn, work together, and build a complex technical solution within a short period of time. And so, and the team you practice with, or if you do practices, may not be the team that's there yep. in place, like, you know, longer term. It's very important to kind of create easily understood baseline things, like stuff that helps these teams. So whether it's structure, it's semantic, just like UX, right? Like it's very thinking, and you bring that UX thinking all across the board into the technology. So it's like making sure when you build those, they're named the exact same way that they're mm-hmm. named at the front end. So designers understand like this component is the same component here, and the front end developers using the same component in their code. And then you're using mm-hmm. the same kind of language across the board. It makes it faster for people to onboard, faster for you to get these people working together. The more you lay out, you can lay out ahead of time, and you can do a lot ahead of time.
I love that. One of the questions we were going to ask would be any tips or tricks with these starter kits. You just skipped over needing to ask the question. That's really cool. So as we kind of start to wrap up our conversation with you, first off, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you guys.
This is super informative.
Yeah, this is great.
So if someone were to want to get involved with a tech challenge, what would be your advice for a current employee and potential looking to get hired?
That is a great question. I think current employee, depending on where you are, but I would say reach out, you know, feel free to reach out to Jason V, within anybody within CSG, right? They'll be able to point you in the right direction and kind of be able to talk to your people manager, right? And kind of voice that, and they'll direct you and get you to the right place. But CSG, V, Jason, whomever, any of us, probably be able to direct you in the right place. There's only so many that come out. Mm-hmm. I think they do come out, you know, consistently, and we're always looking for people. So also being able to kind of say, hey, here's where I think my skill sets, like I might be able to help out. And honestly, like they can be narrow too as well. You don't have to be like a huge, broad, full stack. And sometimes it's important, you know, with tech challenges, I can tell you, you're kind of playing a role on a team too. So there's times where, yeah, even though I can do UX design, mm-hmm. we have like a we have a bunch of people. So I'm doing product management, right? Or I'm doing something else, playing a different role on the team to fill in certain gaps. So current employee, reach out to people manager, any of us in CSG. I would say new employees, come work at MetroStar. I would say we do this. We do it well. We have a great group here. We have an ever-growing business and an ever-growing catalog of these kind of baselines and centralized like research and design activities. We're working on the forefront of modern technology. Come apply, look at the career site, which we can kind of post, apply for a job. Mm-hmm. And you will definitely, and then voice your, you'll get the opportunity to kind of help us grow this business and really see, who knows what the future holds. But I would say, yeah, come work at MetroStar and come find us.
MetroStar.com/join-us.
Yeah. I will say on like that with either in MetroStar or wherever you're at, networking within your company is huge. If you're, just talking to people, that's how you do get more opportunities or just learning about what's going on.
I 100% agree with that. I feel like we've had such a privilege being on the podcast because we get to learn so much about other people's experiences and expertise and what they're doing within the organization.
Mm-hmm. I'd say it's very important. Like anywhere you're at, government or not government, don't be afraid to ask questions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Learn about your business, whether it's, MetroStar folks, learning about how MetroStar grows as a business, like this industry. I just kind of like get your head wrapped around it. It's going to benefit you longer term, but also you'll see opportunities too. Like there might be super things in your career that you may want to go after or projects that may speak more to you. Right. And MetroStar is ever growing. That's the fun part about it. It's like, there's constantly these new opportunities that are coming up. So as other people, as you staying in touch and asking questions and being on things like, the internal calls where to talk about work is it's super valuable.
So if people wanted to find you to connect, where would they look out for you?
Well, that's a good question. I would say you can find me on LinkedIn, probably Matt Schwat, C-H-C-H-W-A-T. I'm pretty unique last name, so you could search me and probably find me. But I'm on Twitter, YouTube. Twitter is MC Flashdance. That's like super, literally.
Super fun.
I'm going to tell you where that came from.
There's a story here.
At JMU, James Madison, me and my friend Chris, this is like junior year or something. We had the 5 to 8 a.m. radio slot on the WXJM.
Yeah.
And we would play like, it was the craziest. It was like 5 to 8 a.m., which is ridiculous, by the way, to do. Like we took the worst spot. And so it was fun though. We would like be able to play any music, but that was we created DJ names and like that was my name. And back when Twitter started, like it was just, I didn't think about my usernames too much when Twitter started and all that stuff. So yeah, that's what my username is. But everywhere else, you just search my name. You can find me on probably LinkedIn. I'm not generating a ton of content right now for anything in particular. On Twitter, it's probably incredibly sparse. Instagram, I probably post more shows that I go to because I love music. Like I said, I was a music major, love music. Still play. Still write. You might find music out there.
Nice.
From different bands I've been in. But you can find me online and feel free to reach out because I'm always happy to talk to people. And definitely if you want to talk about MetroStar, give me a ring, give me a shout and I'm more than happy to point you in the right direction. And who knows, we may have a need in the future.
Nice.
Yeah. Thank you guys.
So I'm going to do one plug for MetroStar in addition to coming and joining us as an employee. We are actually starting a new podcast called Civvies. So it'll be out March 22nd and is a podcast for veterans by veterans. And it'll be posted on the same channels as Mocket is posted on. So it'll be easily findable as well as promoted on all of our social channels as well. And then thank you, Matt, for joining us. Yeah,
thank you, guys.
Yeah, we really appreciated everything that we talked about. We posted it in the show notes so people can access it and get links to anything.
Yeah.
Thanks again.
Reach out. Yeah, again, reach out if you guys want. I wish I could say go to thinkgeek.com to see my old site, but feel free. You can go on the Wayback Machine online. And most of that, yes. But thank you, guys. It's super fun. I'm always happy to chat.
Awesome. Well, this is Mock It. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with your friends, and join us next time. If you're interested in learning more about how government and tech collide, visit metrostar.com and follow us on our socials.
Yeah, and we really
went off the rails.